You're listening to the Highbury Squad, a tribute to Jose Antonio Reyes. Joining me today on the Highbury Squad, unfortunately, Kevin Campbell and Amanda can't be with us today, but we will be doing an overall, collective show with regards to Jose Antonio Reyes, one of my favorite guys in football. I started speaking to this fella, probably around 8 years ago now on World Football Daily. He's the voice of Spanish football, in my opinion. He's an author. He's a football expert. He is, without doubt, a connoisseur of the game. Mr. Graham Hunter, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Hi there. Hi, Sophie.
So I would rather be speaking to you among probably happier times, but as our podcast does focus a lot on Arsenal, and Jose Antonio Reyes was a player that was with us for three seasons. He was part of the Invincibles. Had a huge contribution in certain games at certain times. Just wanted to ask you right off the cuff, Graham, how is his death being received in Spain? What did a Jose Antonio Reyes mean to Spanish football?
Yeah, Sophia, I think that the first thing to go to is that there's been an awful lot of crying. This is obviously a country which emotionally wears its heart on its sleeve. We'll come to Reyes himself individually in a second, but there's also a recent history of proper greats, people from his category, if it was, who've died in traffic accidents. There's been an awful lot of focus on that fact at this point. Learn from this and learn about excessive speed. But I mention that because I think it's, we've lost a guy who, beyond his ability, and that's the other part that I must report, was beloved in that, once again, football's lost somebody young who I think patently still had masses to give, but mm-hmm. his family are now bereft. His parents had to come to their son's funeral. It's always a horrific thing to contemplate, never mind see. But what came out about this guy that we've lost too early there on Saturday morning was the amount of affection for people who knew him. Not just affection from people like you or I who might have had brushes with him in a mixed zone, or for your part you may have mm-hmm. cheered a goal or an assist or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. We've had peripheral contact. Even face-to-face, even an interview is pretty peripheral. Those who really knew him, so if I've come out and talked about his sort of impish sense of humour, his generosity, the fact that he was a guy who how would I put it, the warmth that you could see he was used to being treated with on the pitch by his fellow players was something that extended well off the pitch, and that he was a guy who was loved for his actions and his words and his character, not because he was famous or rich or had been born with talent in his boots. So that has been if not an A to Z, it's been I don't know him that well, and therefore I shouldn't be. I'm not going to say I'm getting emotional, but it's hard not to describe this. The mm-hmm. thing I should maybe pay off with now. The scenes around the Nervión Stadium where, he made his debut for Sevilla, where, was his home team, were really quite remarkable, with the number of fans there gathered as his remains were brought there. The singing of Sevilla's absolutely beautiful, emotional hymno, it's called, anthem, I guess everybody listening would probably mm-hmm. call it. So, it's been, I guess, about as difficult, as sore as you would think it would be losing an impish, funny, clever player like that at such a young age in such absolutely horrific circumstances.
Yeah, no parent wants to bury their child, and to see, at the end of the day, Graham, I think sometimes we get caught up and lost in moments where you know, footballers are humans, and you've covered some of the greatest footballers of our time. And the, you know, at the end of the day, the family also lost, I believe, his 23-year-old cousin was with him in the car. They're not just lose Jose, they lost his cousin, and you know, three kids are left with without a father. And I think sometimes those are the moments that, you know, we put these guys on such pedestals sometimes, and they become almost like comic book superheroes. But at the end of the day, they have families, they have lives. And I think that is probably the most crushing thing of all, isn't it?
For example, I agree. I think that given that, you know, I first properly became aware of Jose Antonio Reyes when I moved here now, which is about 18 years ago. And you know, it wasn't so long after that that Antonio Puerta died on the pitch.
What
Monchi, the football director, has said about how Jose Antonio, there'll be, you know, a hell of a left wing out there when you two are playing together. They were teammates and friends, and Antonio Puerta was one of these sudden deaths whereby there were problems regarding his heart. He'd won the Europa League and scored a decisive penalty at Hampden in the shootout with Espanyol, died. And what I remember then was just really brutally being struck by those left behind. You're right, his wife, the little kid. I knew Tito Villanova at Football Club Barcelona, who'd been Pep Guardiola's emerging player and an assistant coach.
Yeah.
And a lovely man, a really interesting, unusual man. And when he died of a cancer of the pituitary gland that originally was diagnosed, has been one from which people, you know, in the majority now, survive. Mm-hmm. And when he'd been given the okay to go back to work, you're touched by loss. But you are particularly touched, as you pointed out there, seeing those who are near to that person that you might have worked with, or you might have written about, or may have, again, I go back to your instance, who have stirred your emotions and the emotions of those listening now. That leaves us with a pang. I sometimes wonder if a pang for our own future, people we've previously lost who we were really close to. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I've always found sorest is watching the pain of those who are left behind. We've no connection with them. We can't help them. We can't really comfort them in any way. They have to go away and make the best of what remains of their life. And some cope better, some cope worse. There was a third passenger on Saturday morning who is still being treated, still being operated on, had 65% burns on his body. What actually happened on Saturday morning will be devastating to many, many family members and friends in the closest circle of Jose Antonio Reyes for a very long time to come. And once the focus goes away, the realization of exactly what happened, how it happened, and how bad things were before these men died will be just of horrendous pain to them. And therefore, while I do, you know, accept that you're going to look back at the good times, you're going to look back at the things that make him an object of affection for those who listen to you, it's right now here in this country, it's still an extraordinarily high profile and a difficult subject that's causing a lot of people who knew him well an extraordinary amount of pain.
Yeah, and you've seen that from the likes of Moreno, who under his Liverpool shirt in the Champions League final was paying tribute to him. Cesc Fabregas in particular really choked me up with his tribute to his former teammate, roommate. And I do want to kind of move into that moment where he did move to Arsenal. And, you know, one of the things I think Arsenal fans always loved about him, Graham, was that he was a guy a little bit like Dwight York. You know, he always played with a smile on his face. Ronaldinho, these players that you really appreciate and love, not only for their talent, but the way they play the game. And Reyes, to me, seemed like the player that he was always happy to be playing football. At the end of the day, he was a footballer, right? Yes, the glory came, the fame came, the comfort of the game came to him. But he just always seemed like a happy footballer. And when he came to Arsenal, Was that, obviously that was a big deal for him, for his family. When you kind of see that transition of Spanish football in that time, ended up winning the Premier League, becoming an invincible. He won the FA Cup. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be in the Champions League in the 05-06 season. The Barcelona boys didn't allow that to happen. But would you agree that in terms of that time, it was something unique and special?
You've reminded me of something that I'd forgotten. It just wasn't in my head. I gathered my thoughts before this chat, and I thought, what do I have to say that's of any worth? And I wasn't entirely sure. But you reminded me, and it's on a theme about players who play for the joy of the ball, the joy of beating somebody, the joy of communing with the fans, such that if you do something on the pitch, whether it's a great pass or it's a great tackle or it's a goal, or I suppose if it's a goal line save or whatever you want to, however we want to understand the football, means that you and the fans that love you are closer. And I do remember probably again one of the first games of his that I really watched so live. Sevilla beat Madrid 4-1 down in the Nervión. And it emerged afterwards that Zidane, who was still a relative newbie then, had been given the absolute runaround, okay, by the team, but particularly by Reyes. And Stan had said to one of his teammates, what the fuck? Has he got a motorbike hidden up his shorts? Does he always run around like that taking the piss? And when a friend of mine who was involved in Spanish football moved to England, he said, I can't remember if it was Highbury he was going to, but I'd just been dropped off by a taxi driver in London. And then the guy who's my friend is Spanish, and he said, the taxi driver, I was here a week ago and I was dropping off somebody, and my pal said, well, really, who was that? He said, no, it was another Spaniard like you. And it turned out the name of the person, I think, was Ramon Rodriguez. Anyway, it was Monchi, because Monchi's in the name. Monchi is the name that the Sevilla sports director is known. So the deal was that at that stage, Arsenal and Sevilla were engaged in trying to work out if a deal could be done for Reyes. So in those days, I haven't written newsy stuff, newspapers, for a very long time. But in those days, that was still a story. Arsenal interested in Reyes, and I wrote a little bit about it without claiming great big scoops at all. And then David Dean turned up at the stadium. And the president in those days of Sevilla was Del Nido, who subsequently went to the Clink, and is back out now and trying to become president again. And they were negotiating, really end game negotiating for José Antonio Reyes, until the stadium got charged. There was a charge at the stadium by the Sevilla fans, ultra fans, who were called Biribiri, named after some African player who was loved by the supporters at Sevilla, so they named themselves after him. And they literally tried to smash in through windows and glass doors.
Wow.
To demand to Del Nido. I mean, literally, and you can ask David Dean about this. Listen, I spoke to him back in the day. I'm certain he was fully aware. I'm certain. It's just because this story has come to my mind, and it's so long ago. But these fans, dozens and dozens of them, were so utterly outraged that their hero. Now, I'm extrapolating all of this memory from your point about Reyes playing with a smile on his face. He also, maybe he played a smile on his face, not just for the love of the ball, but he did love tricking people. I'm not going right back to say that maybe he was like I always felt about Arthur Graham at Aberdeen, or John Robertson for Nottingham Forest, or Plumy Hutchison, or Eddie Gray, the guys, the wide players that I grew up adoring, absolutely adoring, when as a young Scot back in the 1670s. But Reyes was, I think he was of that culture whereby, wherever you asked him to play, he had this this low center of gravity ability to beat people. And where did that? You just got the feeling he was possibly saying every so often, cheerio to whoever he'd beaten. And there was wit and there was mischief. And the fans, therefore, at Sevilla adored him so much that you know, it was a mini riot when they found out that who was then Arsenal's chief executive leader was at the club trying to buy this guy. And, you know, it sticks with me that although this happens often, and it happened with his novice, it happened when José Antonio Reyes was trying to come back to Spain and play for Real Madrid. For those who are sort of from deepest, darkest Andalusia, the transition to almost any other city, never mind another country, never mind a northern European country, is a tough one. It's just a fact. And when Reyes went to London, we were all following and watching how Willis, it was still in the early days of Spaniards doing what they do now, which is effectively taking the Premier League by storm and in some cases running it. For example, David Silva. And I remember watching him, and I remember watching his degree of integration. And I was at that final you were talking about. You know, I had grown up, like in bits and pieces of Arsenal, particularly when Charlie Nick was there, and when Arsenal sold Charlie Nick to Aberdeen, which was to me a glorious day. I got very friendly with George Graham. Arsenal were a club legend. Where, you know, when, and I've done this in my podcast, when you go to Highbury, it was an extraordinary place, impactful, deeply impactful on you. And I wanted this guy, I wished this guy to do well. And I remember being at that Champions League final in 2006. And I think it's worth me being reminded, those who listen to you won't need to remind me, but, you know, he's invincibles, yes. But he was also part of the only Arsenal side ever to reach a Champions League final. Mm-hmm. And to come within, you know, a damn good touching distance of winning the thing, which I think is an important point to make. The legacy should have been greater, probably, because I think he went with you to the quarterfinals as well.
Yes.
So European football might have been the successes or the distance you went might have been owed to the collective, the fact that you had a great squad then. But he was part of that. And his football quality was added to, as you point out, by the fact that there was wit and mischief, and you could see the shiny whites of his teeth when he did something special.
He for sure did. And there were moments where he really did make us smile. Didn't start off so well. He scored an own goal against Middlesbrough in the League Cup. And that wasn't the best start, but boy, did he make up for it. A little while after when he played Chelsea in the FA Cup, scored some the first goal was just absolutely beyond, you know, sublime, and he did help us accomplish our unbeaten season. You know, he was definitely someone I felt like we wanted to succeed more at the club, and I think that he was just unsettled, wasn't he, really, Graham? It wasn't that he didn't have, you know, the talent. He definitely showed these incredible moments where he had really big moments for us in that unbeaten season, but also his love for Spain and Andalusia and you know, it eventually everyone wants to go home, don't they?
I think he was really turned on by the fact that, you know, as massive as Arsenal are to all of you, and I'm very appreciative of that, because there's been, from my growing up point, there's been, you know, I was very conscious of the first double winning team, very conscious of that, you know, that final and Charlie George's goal. So Arsenal, throughout my entire adult life, or my entire football watching life, Arsenal been very important. But to try, I'm not even convinced that there's a single team in England that has the impact on anybody, even including Manchester United, that the Real Madrid has on Spaniards, most Spaniards. And you need to throw into that the fact that although they're not of the same exact age, Sergio Ramos was there, Reyes had seen Ramos in training at Sevilla, talked about it, said that, even as a kid, Ramos had come in and bossed things in a Sevilla side where the players in his position, either right back or central defence, were big, ugly, tough, hard-nosed, achieving men. And Ramos, even at that young age, was cocky. I'm doing this, you do that, kid. And they were going to be together at Real Madrid, and it was an influence. And I remember José Antonio's mum was very vociferous about, you know, certain remarks that she made. Maybe we don't need to go mad about them, but, you know, about what he would rather be doing, particularly when it came to moving back to Spain, moving to Real Madrid. And then the lure of Real Madrid, honestly, Arsenal could have done just about anything, and still I think the lure of Real Madrid would have been too much, and it's just something that then and now in retrospect people have to ascribe to the fact that the Real Madrid's achievements, what you grew up with, hearing about, what it must have been like for a young kid, Reyes, to see great Madrid sides come down to the Nervión. Great Madrid players that Sevilla shared with the Bernabeu, transfers between the two clubs, all these kind of things, I think were just a magnet with a power that it's a shame for Arsenal that they couldn't do anything to block. And when he came home, you know he was part of a title winning side. You know that he had massive impact on title winning day when one of the biggest turnaround triumphs that Real Madrid have ever had, literally, in their amazing history, when everybody had given up mid-season except for Capello. It was David Beckham's only title-winning season. And they turned it down. They hunted down Barcelona. They won games where they were out of things, and it came down to the last day against Mallorca, and Reyes had a massive say in.
Oh, my God, my hair's gone up. That was... yeah.
And, you know, if it hurt, or if it still hurts people who are died in the whole Arsenal, he didn't just leave like a flibbertigibbet. He left to a side that he made champions of Spain in what really is one of, if not the biggest comeback season they've ever had. So I think that needs to be some sort of context and maybe some compensation for those who felt that. Because there's manner of leaving, Sophie, just because we're talking about a recently departed guy. There's no point in bullshit, you know. His manner of leaving was inelegant, and it wasn't, I think, wholly respectful to Arsenal.
Yeah, I agree.
But in context, looking back, I think people can understand why.
Yeah, I agree, Graham. I think Reyes' departure was really from the heart, and you talk and touch on something that, you know, the pull is for Real Madrid and to some extent, you know, Barcelona more so with the South American players for sure, but... You know, we're talking about two clubs that are in, who wouldn't want to play for them. Same like when young kids were growing up back in the day, where really they wanted to play for Manchester United or Liverpool, right? That was the thing. And like Cesc, I actually didn't. The manner in which Cesc left, of course, was a little bit different. But who can blame him also for wanting to just go back home and play for his boyhood club? Just amazing that your boyhood club is Barcelona. What do you think of? I mean, he's won Europa League with Unai Emery, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I think that he inherited a mess at our club, and the fact that some Arsenal fans are calling for his head based on the fact that, you know, he's going into, you know, his first season here. But a manager who won Europa League 3 years on the trot. I mean, I don't care who you're facing and what the opposition is, to do that, you know, is an incredible achievement. And Reyes was part of that. Do you know anything about their relationship, Graham? Do you have any insight into his impact or that time?
What I can say that I think stands up is that Unai Emery is a guy who's extremely organised and methodical, and has always, since I very first started listening to him speak, which had been when he was, I didn't see him or know of him as a player. But when he was coach of Almeria and I was on Revista de la Liga on Sky, we had to pay damn close attention to Almeria because this side, which has recently, you know, moved up from Segunda to the Primera, were capable of giving either beating Real Madrid or giving Real Madrid or Barcelona a big fight. So what Unai Emery has always said is that, you know, football is obviously a game where chance and creation and wit and invention or mistakes and nerves play a part. But his belief has always been that by overworking it on his part and then almost over-communicating it to his players, he's always felt that you can, like using a pencil eraser on the lead you've left on the paper, you can almost rub out, you know, 95% of it, 90% of it. And therefore, he's a guy for whom players like Reyes either can pay attention to learn and add to their natural, exceptional, anarchic invention, or they're no use to him. And a comparison would be like Delphio played for Emirates. So didn't quite harness the special things that he can do to the demands of Emery, and Reyes did. And I think that you've offered up something that maybe links a little bit, in that the leaving of Arsenal was a bit inelegant from Reyes, but he wasn't, I don't think, that mature. And I think that certainly, as his experiences at Atleti or Benfica went by, what we began to see in Reyes was a guy who was very, very happy and proud to be home, happy to have given another chance at his club. Much, much more football mature, but also somebody who was taking very seriously the idea that he'd been given a chance to be involved in something special at Sevilla.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it sometimes in guys of his position or guys of his types of skills. When they're young, the mustache thing about, let's jump and run and use meadows and go crazy, can be quite fun to watch. It's refreshing every time it comes through anywhere in football, whether it's your colours or not. You're like, wow, that's good to see. But what you ask of them is to then get a little bit of wisdom, get a little bit of maturity, and some do, some don't. But very often, in the latter parts of these players' careers, they don't need the mad spring lamb thing.
Mm-hmm.
What they realise they've got is a bit of wit about an opposing player's balance. Which foot are they balanced on? If I show one way, how quickly do I sprint the other way? If I've got a space, what do I use that space for? Is it a pass? Is it to try and draw another player to me so there's space for... And Emery and Reyes are two pretty significantly different types of football people, but Reyes showed that he absolutely understood what his boss was about.
Mm.
And therefore, he became, in my opinion, a pretty significant part of not just the skill that took Sevilla to Europa League. What I remember thinking was that even as he slowed down, and even as he carried, you know, a kilo and a half or two more than the young José Antonio Reyes, the wit and the brain got sharper. And I think that was really something that dovetailed with what Emery likes in a footballer.
Mm.
And it might be, in all honesty, something that your squad currently is still looking for, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. You're listening to the Highbury Squad. We are joined by Graham Hunter. If you haven't read his book, The Making of the Greatest Team in the World, Barca, The Making of the Greatest Team in the World, you should. Also, Spain, The Inside Story of La Roja's Historical Treble, incredible stuff. He's also spoken to the likes of Mr. Leo Messi, Iker Casillas, Xavi, Guardiola.
Sophie, you're too kind.
I mean, Graham, honestly, I could listen. You should just be on radio 24/7. You should have your own channel. No, I'm being serious. Like, your insights, the way you... I've always loved talking to you about football, and I could talk to you about football all day long. And, you know,
your sense of timing is beautiful, because I know that not all your audience is in the States, but I know you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it was June 4 that Take the Ball, Pass the Ball, the film that Duncan McMath and I and Zoom made out of the Barca book that I wrote, hit the United States audiences in all kinds of formats, but it's Amazon or iTunes or DVD or Hulu or a list I won't go into. So I'm pleased now that book has been made into a film, and Take the Ball, Pass the Ball.
Brilliant.
Has reached the States. So if there are fellow Gooners in the States, then it's now available to them. But, you know, cutting me out, what's always appealed to me is, you know, Arsenal being treated with the utter passionate devotion you've got for them, plus the journalistic knack. And I suspect it's about 2 a.m. where you are right now.
It's a little, it's not that late, but yeah.
You're into this with the precision of a surgeon. Because it's the club that you love. So,
well, I'll always appreciate, you know, the fellas from World Football Daily that kind of brought us together. And you've always been so gracious with your time. And if I can just hold you for just a few minutes more, you know, just shifting gears just a little bit here. Let me ask you, I've got a couple questions. I can't leave without asking you these two questions. So the first one is, do you think Unai Emery is the right guy for the job? And is there a right guy for the job when you have a ownership that isn't truly engaged in creating success in terms of trophies, but definitely monetarily, the monetization of Arsenal versus the club that we once were and won? Do you think Unai has been unfairly treated by fans at the end of the season? What's your take on that?
We don't have the time, and my phone that I'm using, cordless phone, doesn't have the battery to give you my full feelings on this. Because I think you're in trouble. And I think that it's, not many people will like this comparison, but it's kind of like, as far as your noble position in English football goes, it's a little bit death by a thousand cuts, like it is with Manchester United. There are brutal similarities at nearly all levels. And maybe let's focus on one thing that I won't feel like I'm a ranting fan by saying, because, you know what? You know, I have to say that if I was starting to speak about the things you've talked about with your club, I'd be vitriolic. Unai Emery, I think it's self-evident that this is a guy of order, of preparation, of strategy, of development, of somebody upon whom you can rely as long as you don't pull the carpet from underneath him. And I think that, you know, he's come relatively close to a very good season, because it's just like the Chelsea thing. For all the shit that Chelsea have had to put up with this season, one way or another, everybody's kind of now patting them on the back for fourth position or wherever they finished, pardon me, third maybe it was, and a trophy. So fine. They also have bought, despite, you know, not really having a proper director of football, they've bought quite well. They've got an extraordinary footballer in Jorginho, and they appointed a coach in Sarri to whom they didn't really give the correct working tools. And it's a pretty wafer-thin difference between that picture and the picture at Arsenal, except there were more resources, in my humble opinion, for Sarri than there were for Emery. I think that look at Emery coming to England for the first time. I can't remember exactly when Mislintat left, but he did, didn't he?
Yes.
During
the middle of the season.
You've got an atmosphere where it's not feasible for you to currently attract the absolute elite players, yet you've got a strike force which I think can be something truly extraordinary. It really can. You've got a decent player in Mkhitaryan who couldn't play in your last shot at a trophy. I would strongly be of the opinion that right now, well, there are two different expressions. One is crude, one is not, and you can cut one out. But rather than swimming against the tide, I'd say to some extent, poor old Emery is pissing it in the wind here. And
yeah,
I think that he should be, given his ability, given what everybody who is signing him knows he needs to do. If he'd been helped and protected a little bit more by all of those around him, whether that be levels of ambition, whether that be levels of stability rather than, if not quite chaos, then something close to it. If it had been not for, the ridiculous nature of the Baku trip, I watched your side at Valencia. I was there, and there was a clarity, a dynamism, a quality of football, the way in which the vertical football was played with intelligence and speed. You know, I think that there's more of a legacy, that there's been more decent work done this season than in the pain of defeat to Chelsea, than in the pain of no Champions League, than a lot of people are willing to countenance. But it's not enough that you've signed a good coach. You know, it's patently obvious that Arsenal still lack the right kind of quality on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can either go and blow other people away for the big established properties who are at the right age with the right level of hunger, but also of the brilliance of talent. Or you can be extraordinary like Liverpool have been, or extraordinary like Porto often are, extraordinary like Sevilla were under Monchi. And you can beat people to players where you've just scouted harder or more cleverly. And that's where Arsenal were supposed to be going when was a disbanding of the, you know, I have to say it, run down, disjointed scouting organisation under a manager. I'm sorry to whoever I offend, but, you know, Wenger stayed far, 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 far too long. And he looks clever and elegant and articulate in retrospect now. Mm-hmm. Not in a fucking job.
Yeah.
And therefore, the turnaround, you know, it is a giant ocean liner,
mm-hmm.
which was going in the wrong direction. And the breaking and turnaround pattern is very, very inelegant and slow. And while I'm not going to say it's a miracle they finished where they did, because with a little bit of a following wind, that could have been Arsenal, fourth and trophy winners. And this isn't the purpose of your question, Sloan, but I genuinely think that across the two European finals, and if Arsenal fans don't look at this and assimilate it and use it to their club's benefit, then it's a mistake. Chelsea come out very well of the four teams that were in those finals, because for whatever reason, and in the second half in Baku, it wasn't all Arsenal's fault. Chelsea found pace and wit and the ability to beat a man, movement that was clever and well-directed and aggressive. So, you know, playing so late in the, so long after the competitive season has stopped, playing in Baku, playing in that temperature that time, it was a disadvantage to all teams. And in the first half, we saw that. But Arsenal need to be looking over their shoulder and going, what was it that equipped Chelsea to be that much better, that much quicker, that much more resourceful, that much more determined, fitter in the second half? And then learn from it and mimic it. Because, you know, really, in a first season for a Spanish coach and somebody who thrives on a different working atmosphere than he got at your club, you know, you were pretty damn close to saying, wow, this is a hell of a first fight back season.
Absolutely.
And there's lessons to be learned from that, I agree.
Yeah.
Is my opinion.
I couldn't have put it better myself. You know, we were broken. We've been broken for years. And for people to expect Emery to just turn it around, he had us punching. We were punching way above our weight. And then when we didn't close, everyone kind of, you know, pointed the finger at him and he became the dartboard. But yet, you know, he got us into a position that nobody thought we'd be in. No one thought we'd be competing for Champions League football again. I don't think a lot of people thought we'd get to Europa League final, but they hoped we would because of Emery's pedigree in the competition. And I can't leave our discussion, and I know I'm hogging you. You're probably going to go off for some amazing tapas and an amazing dinner this evening, but I do have two more questions. One is Arsenal, and then I'll leave you on one with Barcelona. But I do want to know, why do you think Monchi, after working so closely with Emery, why did he walk away from the Arsenal opportunity? I'm not sure I buy the heartstrings when knowing him and knowing how competitive he is, Why do you think he walked away from the opportunity, Graham, to work with Emery again? Why?
I need to preface the answer by saying, you know, I don't know as a fact. I think that's important to say, because I've been told often that I speak with such... I often speak in capital letters, and that can lead people to think that I'm always stating I know this is a fact. So in this instance, the only fact I can give, and it's not me disagreeing with you, is I think that if we're going to consider it properly, comes a decent conclusion, then we are talking. Munchie does is head over heels in love with Sevilla. Did see them going awry. Didn't believe the club should have sacked Machin, the coach who was removed 2/3 of the way through the season. Didn't feel that the club was in the right hands vis-a-vis Caparrós, who took over. Caparrós, who was the coach that day, I told you, when Reyes and Sevilla beat Madrid 4-1 back in 2003. And therefore, before we really get to the nub of your question, which is Munchie and Arsenal, not Munchie and Sevilla, don't discard the fact that he adores that club. It's something that's in his blood, in his DNA. Where I'll meet you halfway is maybe that wasn't everything. And in my opinion, it's just a guess, having been at Roma, working for an American owner who's completely different from your majority shareholder, but nonetheless not getting on particularly well, working for the first time in his life in a volatile atmosphere, but in a volatile atmosphere where he had no markers, no control, no structure around him, and taking soundings of how things are at Arsenal, and I would say with particular importance to Kroenke and where you can, if you were to chart the next 5 years, then if what makes Stan Kroenke happy with his investment is to continue, it's going to be a brave man or woman who says, well, things are automatically going to get better than they are right now, because you have a major problem there, I think, in how other people are moving ahead, the lack of Champions League revenue, the force for change in the modern game almost always has to come either come downwards from the top, or the top have to be in lockstep with you. The idea about a club being blitzed upwards from the fans or the media or one heroic employee, be he football director or coach, that again, I'm going to use the phrase, that's pissing in the wind in the modern game with all the massive money and corporate structures. It ain't going to happen. Yeah. So I'm now interpreting, I think Munchie went, fuck, I've just had Roma. I know that felt like. I'm looking at the 5-year forecast in the Kroenke, and I don't fancy it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right. Okay, so I'm going to let you go off on this one, because obviously we've talked about Real Madrid. We've talked about some wonderful things here in terms of players who seek, you know, to want to play for these amazing clubs in Spain, Graham, and there are a couple of players of ours, actually, Lacazette and Aubameyang, and I don't know, obviously, the rumour mill and the clickbaits, are in full effect, and they will be until August. Lacazette, Aubameyang supposedly being eyed by Barcelona. Today's story that really took me by surprise was Kolasinac as a potential option for them, but then you've got Messi saying, I don't want Griezmann because I don't like his attitude. And I'm shocked by that, because the reports are saying that he wants Neymar back. And I think he's probably got one of the worst attitudes of any professional footballer, probably wasting his talent more on marketing than he is on playing on the pitch, in a nutshell. And then you've got the Dutch superstar, the Ajax De Ligt. Is it De Ligt or De Ligt? So Give me an overview of what one of the greatest football clubs in the history of the universe is going to do, and are they going to steal some of our players?
Yeah, I hadn't heard anything about Kolasinac, and I think that's no danger. I don't think. Aubameyang does what he does, and he's significantly outscored Lacazette. He's patently a gazelle. patently, an interesting footballer. I don't see that in a million years. I didn't even know that there were rumours of Boston over. I said, I can't see him. Aubameyang is a guy, again, in my opinion, who likes the ball played into him. He's a finisher, he's a runner, he's a mover. You know, he's the antithesis of Suarez, who's the guy that needs augmenting or replacing. Suarez has been world-class. He's a world-class football brain. Aubameyang is a different kind of guy. Lacazette, I have seen the chat about Lacazette. I can understand a little bit. In my humble opinion, I don't imagine either of them will finish at Football Club Barcelona. I don't see any reason why Arsenal wouldn't try and, you know, punch the faces off anybody who tries to take them away, because they're a partnership, they're interesting, they're at the right age, they like playing with each other. You keep them at all costs, you fight. The Griezmann thing, you know, there is a deal between Barcelona and Griezmann long since. Whether they have the all this bullshit in the Catalan and Spanish newspapers about the players not wanting Griezmann is just so much tedious bullshit.
I thought so, yeah.
There's another shade to it, which is that you did touch on something that's true, that Messi and Suarez are umbilically close, tight friends. It's like they're brothers. And when they don't play together, they'll buck this trend that I've always found amazing. When you see players tight together, playing 5-6 years together in a dressing room, liking each other, winning together, they go apart and you meet one of them and you say, oh, you've spoken to them. God, no, I haven't spoken to them for 3 or 4 years. I've always found that literally amazing, that footballers who are like, you know, a band of brothers, as soon as they're not in the same dressing room, they're like, well, yeah, whatever. Suarez and Messi won't be like that. And for whatever reason, because I would not be the world's number one Neymar fan at all. For whatever reason, the three of them remain close. And yes, Messi would be the author of the idea that it might be a good idea to bring Neymar back. Yes. It isn't going to happen. I would say, I mean, categorically it's too strong, because football is completely mental. But without the time to explain it fully, I don't think any of the proper conditions can fall into place for Neymar to come back, unless fate has extraordinary twists and turns. I just don't see it. Griezmann could work, could fit. Peyton wants to Football Club Barcelona. Have they got the money to get what they want, which is him plus one or two other minor adjustments, and De Ligt to add to Frankie de Jong? So De Ligt plays at centre-half and de Jong plays at the organising midfielder role. Have they got the money to do that, plus all the recent renovations of contracts, plus buy Griezmann when his buyout clause drops in July the 1st? I don't think they do. The other clubs look at Barcelona and say, well, we're going to pick you off and get bargains from you. Yeah, that is the case. They're in a very difficult position. It's of their own making. Over years gone by, I very much trust and like the guy who's part of the team now, which is Eric Abidal, who I listen to and speak to.
Oh, wow.
I think there are one or two in the planning team who I think are in at the wrong club and bring the wrong ideas. And I think that Barcelona wouldn't be in the mess they're in right now if they hadn't appointed those guys. Pep Segura being one of them, ex-Liverpool. I don't think he's the right fit for Football Club Barcelona. I think part of what's happened has been on his watch, is what I would say. So there are bargains for people. I can't remember if it was Wenger in his glory days who said that it was a great idea to hang around outside Real Madrid like a supermarket and pick up their discarded items, something like that. And he was right at the time, because big clubs in Spain can get themselves into such a muddle, can behave like Keystone Cops, that they are left desperately needing to sell off. So, for example, two assets that were flogged off desperately cheap by Florentino Perez were at the end of the same season. Wesley Sneijder and Arjen Robben, who went on. Sneijder won the treble the next season, and Arjen Robben has only just left Bayern Munich something like 10 years later with just about as many trophies as blooming Andres Iniesta.
Yeah.
It's gone that well for him. So I think we're at that situation now at Football Club Barcelona where there are bargains to be picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that on balance, I still think that Griezmann, who thought he was coming to Barcelona when he made that video, I still think he might end up here. Is it assured? No, it's not 100% assured. still think it's likely. But for people who want to try and pick up Coutinho, then he's going a-begging. Semedo at right back, I think there's a chance that he'll be bought. Cillessen, the backup keeper, will go. They're trying to move Rakitic out. Rakitic, you can't solve Arsenal's problems in one kick. But putting Rakitic in that team, putting Rakitic on that training ground and putting Rakitic in that dressing room would take you three or four giant steps towards the atmosphere, the intelligence, the...
Oh, I'd take him.
The quality, the nous. But he is literally saying to them, I have got a huge length of contract. I'm happy as a pig in shit. I am not moving. So I think he's going to probably win that argument on Football Club Barcelona. Although they came very, very, I mean, arguably they came within four goals of a treble, their third treble. They are in a state of flux and rebuilding, and I don't think that they've got the capacity to get it right first time this summer. But there are bargains, and I would say to you that you can have three free podcasts with me.
I'm six minutes.
I've ended up at Barcelona this summer.
Okay, fine. Then I'll follow up on that. I'm 6 minutes outside of an hour with you, and I haven't even asked you about Zizou and Real Madrid and Bale and that whole thing. So maybe we can talk about that next time. But
here's your answers. Here's your answers.
In a nutshell, yeah.
He's hanging on a shaky thread. He needs a very good start to the season. Florentino Perez is idiot enough to get rid of him if by early autumn things aren't right. Gareth Bale's got a huge contract, and he's stubborn enough to put two fingers up to Real Madrid and stay because he loves the city and he loves the golf, and he's got a huge contract.
And Graham, do you feel like it's a little ungrateful in some ways? I know he's been injured. I know he's had issues. And I know he hasn't learned the language, which I think is the thing that hasn't endeared him to the fans. But is it a little unfair to kind of just ostracize him the way he has?
The world of football works like that, and I think you know it very well.
Yeah.
They've tried, now this is their third time to push him out the door. And he's just said no each time. When they wanted to sign Mbappe, they had to get rid of one of Ronaldo, Benzema and Bale, not for financial reasons, but Mbappe's representative, plus Mbappe's father, I think Killian, said to them, he's not going there unless one of the BBC is offloaded because he wants to play. And they went to Bale and they tried to push into Manchester United, and the picture of Jose Mourinho in the pre-season friendly at, I was going to say Washington, but I might be wrong there, where Madrid play United, and Mourinho's waiting in the tunnel and saying, I can't buy you because you don't speak the demand from Manchester. Mourinho spoke to Bale directly at the end, when that season, the season before that pre-season had just ended, to say, these are the conditions, this is what would happen, blah, 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 blah. And Real Madrid, Manchester United wanted Bale to speak out and say, I want out of Real Madrid. And he didn't. He didn't want out. He didn't do it. He didn't move to Man United. And that was way back then, which I think must have still been the beginning of Mourinho's penultimate season.
Yes, it was. Because I covered them when they were here in the US, and I remember that. I remember that time, yeah.
I think I've probably got the stadium wrong, but the hard fact is that the power lies with the player, and you're talking about his ostracization. The fact is, since before you and I were born, clubs have treated players like commodities. Mm-hmm. And when they've got a bigger strategic purpose, they'll say to the player, you know, you're out, you're fucked. You tell your agent there, or you're not playing. We're taking away your playing card. If you don't, you know, if you stay here, you won't even be on the bench. You won't get to play. That's how clubs have treated footballers time immemorial. And it isn't aimed solely at Gareth Bale per se. They've just discovered they've got a strategic need, which is to buy other players, to renovate the squad. They need the money, and they try to push him out the door. And unless something appeals to him, he literally has not only the financial security, the length of contract, and the stubbornness to say, bollocks to you.
Yeah.
And given that I think it would be better for him as a tremendous footballer, tremendous athlete, to enjoy the last few years of his career. I'm maybe talking 5-6 years, I hope, at a club where he's wanted. I'd rather he moved. But if he's stubborn and stays, I will watch with delight. People are saying, you can't push me around.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's healthy to see. It's good. Workplace bullying is bad. There you go.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, you know what? I'm rallying for him to come over here and play with Zlatan, because I'm enjoying a little Zlatan right here in LA, and it's a joy to watch him and see him, even in the twilight of his career, scoring bicycle kicks. It would be amazing to get, I think, you know, for the game here in the US, to get someone like Bale over at this point in his career where he can still
just
offer something.
Sure, he's got a good golf course.
He's got, there's plenty around here, mate. Plenty around here. I can definitely recommend a few. Mr. Graham Hunter, thank you so much for your generous time. You're an epic, epic human, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, let's join all of us by saying, you know, rest in peace, Jose Antonio Reyes, and the best of luck and best of emotional strength to everybody who loved him.
Amen.